Welcome back. I am pleased to be in here with Michael McDermott, a child of Orland Park, and who has had a, I've known a lot of music. I don't go out and hear music as much as I used to in the old days, but he has had as interesting a career, from what I have read and heard, as almost anybody. You remind me of some of the guys I used to know who were children of the 60s, Michael. you've had some up and downs in this career. One of the interesting things is you got hot very young. Mm-hmm. How?
Well, so I was on my way here, and the studio is amazing, and I was feeling a bit like that new Jurassic Park movie. I was wandering through the city because I was very kind of vampiric. I was like the dinosaur walking apocalyptic streets. Boom! But this is beautiful, and what a
yeah studio. The views unbelievable. The views are really amazing.
But I was thinking about it. So back in your guest Bruce, it's amazing. I didn't like kind of cross paths with him. I'm stunned, and maybe I did, and I just don't remember.
You might have, yeah.
But I got involved very early from Orland, though. I moved into the city very young, just out of high school, 88.
Where did you start hanging out?
So it was like Earl of Old Town.
Oh my God, a half a block from the Ale House.
Yeah, and then Earl's Pub. Then it was and Orphans and. So it was a bunch of those things. Mike Jordan, Tom Dundee,
See, Mike's an interesting guy. I know he was a big influence in your life because Mike was I know he died in like the early 90s, and so did Stevie. And Mike was a very influential guy who should be, I think, sort of named with.
Yes.
John Prine.
Yeah, and I talked
Goodman.
To Prine about him, too, and you know, he certainly remembered. But he was amazing. And when I first got signed, I tried to get Mike signed. Like, that was my dream. The guy that signed me, Brian Koppelman, who's now gone on, you know, he has that show Billions and wrote all these movies. But so I played a bunch of Mike's stuff for Brian, and he said, "This is amazing. I can make a real cheap record." And I said, "Yeah, do it. And then I got him in touch with Mike, and he was living in Foley, Missouri. So I said, "Mike, this guy's very interested. Send him stuff." And it's kind of similar to the Bruce story he was telling, I was listening to in the car earlier. But then Mike didn't, he had a bit of a chip. And so Brian just wanted to hear more songs, and I said, "Send him more songs." And he's like, "You know, man, I just don't want to go through the thing." I was like, "What thing?" Just
one of the interesting things. I mean, you were young. I mean, what happened to you? It seems to me it reminds me of something. I don't know if you even know this name. A guy named Bill Quaitman.
I don't.
Who was a big folk rock guy around the time John and Steve were doing that. He got plucked. An incredibly good-looking kid. He got plucked out of Chicago, got a big record deal, taken to L.A., and just got swallowed.
Yeah, swallowed. Yeah.
In a sense, that success, do you think, came too quickly for you?
I do. I remember this guy saying, "Michael McDermott, it's never a question of if, it's a question of when."
Wow.
And
that can turn your head.
Yes.
I mean, that can...
Yeah. No, I was kind of washed up by the time I was like 23. I was.
Well, some of that was your own doing, too.
My demise was very orchestrated.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to, I'm not being unctuous here, but I wanted to meet you so badly because I feel like I was a man out of time, or a kid out of time even. Like, I was in Earl's reading Ginsberg, and I was, people were like, "Who is this kid with the sunglasses on?" I mean, it was ridiculous.
Sure.
But I was seeking something, a time that I was definitely misplaced. I feel that, and that was such.
How old are you?
I'm 48.
See, if you were about, I'm just thinking, if you were 12, 15 years older, then you were part of that.
Right.
The previous scene, and you got in there where the scene was in such flux.
It was, and there wasn't much there, and I remember Chris Farrell, sitting there telling me how to read Kerouac, that there's a way to read. I didn't know that,
interesting.
It was, and I was just a kid, and my friends were at college parties, and it was a different life I was living in.
Well, what kind of life, what did your parents do? What kind of life in Orland did you have?
My dad sold insurance, the Woody Allen joke, there's, the only thing worse than death is being caught in a room with an insurance salesman. That was not my father. But they did that, and my brother took over the business. My dad lived beyond his means, and so we were always kind of constantly in a state of losing everything in the house and all that.
Where'd you go to high school?
Carl Sandburg.
Did you leave?
Sorry?
Did you graduate?
I did.
With any notion of going to college?
I went to a day of Loyola, and then I just realized when I got the syllabus, I dropped out.
Yeah, that's like me. I went to a day of Circle Campus. you are out of time. When did music get in your life?
It was like eighth grade or something like that. And
ow.
I saw the Stones, you know, and it was a weird role model to have Keith Richards, you know, and I took care of the drugs, the addiction, and the prison sentences, and I took care of all that except the success. It would have been a perfect ending. But
what was it, Michael McDermott? Was it a sense of, now that you're older and can have some perspective on it, was it a sense of freedom that they embodied, or was it a sense of freedom and fun, too?
No, I never thought it was supposed to be fun, and maybe I should have gotten that. Because Brian Kaltman, in fact, he took me into, after my first or second record, he brought me in and he started playing me these Van Halen songs. And I was like, and he played another one. And I said, what's the point of all this? And he said, it doesn't all have to be so serious.
Wow, interesting.
You know, and I was like, you're right. You know, it can be fun. I think it was the outlaw nature of it, which I think is why I got into drugs, quite frankly.
Sure.
It's a whole counterculture. It's very secretive. There's a lot of handoffs, a lot of secret meetings.
Well, also when you're 19 and you've got your first album out, and you're traveling a little bit, the seductions of the road for a 19. You know, it's what I imagine life as, like an NBA star.
Right.
If you don't have 80 people around taking care of you.
Right.
And I suppose it's very, very seductive.
It is. It's the only job you're encouraged to be out of your mind, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even in ballplayers, they have to perform.
Sure.
So that was I was never much of a drinker. I never did drugs. So, like, but then shortly thereafter, when it's just available all the time and, you know, things start going south. It was a perfect storm of sorts. Yeah.
What about the career? As one's career, and you kind of just, I'm not going to say you were like a one-hit wonder, but you were like a one-album hotshot.
For sure, yeah. Absolutely, it's fair to say.
And then that vanishes, you can still perform and you can still play, but it's...
But I was crippled.
It's a weird limbo, isn't it?
It was. It was terrible. It was totally in between. And being still so young and not knowing, like, wait, now what? And so that was terrible.
What kind of support did you get from your folks?
They were very supportive, and I didn't even realize...
Were they worried?
I think so. Certainly knew about the declining health and all that, and there were interventions. And then when I was facing 3 to 6 years in prison, you know, that was, it was a drug bust, but I had a lot. And it was serious.
Where were you?
I was at the House of Blues, actually. Yeah, which I thought was...
You were going in to see a friend, right?
I was, And I thought it was funny that a place built on cocaine would be that...
Right. That's the money to build that place came from cocaine.
So, So, anyway, so it was a long way down, for sure.
And, how far down?
Well, I was almost dead, really. And, I was yellow, and my wife's listening to me breathe because I would stop on occasion. And it was very, Nick Cage leaving Las Vegas kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a remarkable recovery, too, and we will talk about that. And all the while, though, you kept producing music.
Which is the most amazing
which
thing.
Which must have, in a sense, it is amazing, but it also must have, in a sense, been a kind of salvation for the music. Or was it more like a life raft?
I was just going to say that. Yeah, it was. It was a life preserver, really. I just was hanging on by a thread. You were saying to Bruce, like, he had regrets too. And I thought, regrets are a funny thing. And it's, there's some that would say there's nothing good or bad in life. It's just, how you define those things. And the only thing I would feel I have any pangs of regret are that I wasn't as clear to work. My work suffered.
Yeah.
And it really didn't. That's all that ever really mattered. And now it feels like I'm making up for lost time, and I'm kind of working like a fiend.
But also, I this is a very interesting conversation, and your music is what has informed me about all this. That it's more common in jazz that, these people can, like Billie Holiday, can be beaten up and beaten up and beaten up, And then it shows in her music, but she doesn't write her music. That's the interesting and different thing. I'm going to spend the rest of this show talking to Michael McDermott about his music and his life and his latest CD and his wife and his kids.
I have some questions for you, too, so I don't know if we're going to get to all that. I have some questions for you, too, so I don't know if we're going to get to... You said it was my show.
Welcome back. I have another half hour with my new friend, Michael McDermott. You can learn a lot about him beside the stuff we're talking about, like going to jail and doing drugs and snapping out of that, by going to michael-mcdermott.com. It's a great website. It shows you all these upcoming engagements and a very, very frank sort of little bio you've written called Out From Under. And that's what he has come out from. He's out from under some nasty times.
Yes.
That would have done in. I mean, I've known people, we've both known people in this business who don't come out.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when I mentioned, you know, not being working with a clear eye, the fact that I was so flippant and so whimsical with life is the most embarrassing thing, because now I'm very grateful to be alive, and I love it here. And even given this very disquieting time, it's I would like to stick around.
Yeah, as weird as is the time we live in.
Right.
Your wife, Heather, certainly helped you out of that.
She did.
And your daughter, Rain.
Yes.
There's nothing like having a kid making sense of life.
Yeah. And there's nothing like a kid looking at you like you had three heads, you know. To sober you up a bit, you know. But yeah, it was, I needed in some way, I think I needed permission to stop. I felt like I was a little bit out of control, and I was just kind of, and she finally couldn't take it. And I think I was waiting to do that. That's and pushed really her good. To.
Now, how long have you been straight and sober?
4 years, over four years. Yeah.
Is January. It hard?
Tough question.
It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, it was tougher, you know, at the earliest days were very, very hard. But now I don't think about it that much, you know.
Other things are
right.
Giving you sensory feedback. So it's just about feedback.
Because everybody works programs, and if you work an unconscious program, which is what I was working, I was just kind of very numb to everything. But now everything sticks, and, so now I do other things to
let's hear you. You get to play disc jockey.
Okay,
what are we going to hear?
So this is the title track. I always wanted to say that on the radio. From the new record, Out From Under. Michael McDermott here on GN.
Who are we becoming? You know we ain't. burdens of the day. I'm tired of feeling helpless. You know we can't go on this way. Oh, wake me from this cruel and senseless slumber.
Thank
you. I really do.
Thank you.
Where do you record?
I do that at home. I did it in Willow Springs, actually, where we were living at the time, yeah.
Now, your wife plays with you.
She does, yeah.
And she does her own stuff, too.
She does.
How did you two, you met, she joined your band.
She did.
And
she
basically,
was,
right?
Yeah, I was looking for a fiddle player and went to the Underground Wonder Bar in Walton and walked in. And she was,
Underground Wonder Bar.
I walked in, Rick, and I hear this song that I know, and it was a Mike Jordan song, and I was enraged, though. I was like, who would dare play Mike stuff? Up there, so afterwards I said, I don't know whether to kill you or marry you, because how do you do a Mike Jordan song? She's like, and she didn't even know the title of it. She just got
Who are you?
I know. Who are you? So,
her name is Heather Lynn Horton, and one of her CDs is Don't Mess with Mrs. Murphy. You've been married since 2009?
Yeah. Got married in Italy on tour, in the middle of like a 16-day tour.
You have a very active tour schedule.
I do, yeah.
Do you like that still? It doesn't bring back any ghosts for you.
No, it doesn't.
And probably the people who approach you now are not the same goofballs who approach the 19-year-old Mike McDermott.
Well, most of the time, like in Italy, too, people would always be like, Michael, why do you drink so much? You know, like, so I think they're, you know, certainly that country's happy that I'm not drinking anymore. It's great. I'm much more workmanlike now. I do my show. Go back to the hotel. Well,
how has your songwriting been enriched by sobriety?
I think it's just a clear...
Can you sense it, or...
I try not to think about it, you know?
Yeah,
and I don't know how you work, and that's what I wanted to ask you, too. Like, you know, certainly it's a whole different climate as a writer now, and you must feel that. You know, and there's a different way you approach language, I think, now. And I don't know. I was going
to
ask
you. I try not
to.
I mean, I try to, you know, the venue is a newspaper, and I am not, instead of fighting the urge to be
anything
celebrity.
But
I don't do clickbait.
Right.
You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I know that, you know, this.
But see, authenticity, though, work. I mean, that's what I think ultimately people respond to. And, you know, and that's why I think you've managed to have such a great career.
That means a lot to me. It's tough to, you know, nobody has ever been able to think. You haven't. No songwriter I know, the Beatles got lucky, but no songwriter I know can say, I'm going to write a song that 20 million people buy. You can't do it because it's not going to be genuine.
No, it's going to be awful. Yeah. So I try not to think about writing. I just write.
Yeah.
You know, and then the story, like Michelangelo said, he just released what was in the stone, you know, and that's kind of what we do as writers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. What's your daughter think of what her parents do?
She's very unimpressed.
She's nine now?
Yeah. No, seven.
Seven. Gotta be eight.
Yeah. She's very, she's very, you know, she's kind of over it already. You know, and people
don't love play
her.
So loud. Yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah.
Don't play so loud. Yeah. But you're a rock. I mean, you're really a musical family. Does she go on the road with you, Rain?
Not often, but she does because now the school. But she's been, you know, overseas in Europe, and it's a grind. You know, it's having a small child.
The music business confounds me these days.
Yes,
because of the whole notion of creating a CD. When one creates a CD, and tell me I'm wrong, it is created with a certain narrative that one song is this is cut one, and this is cut two because you want it to follow cut one, cut
ideally,
three.
Ideally, yeah. You, like any show, you know, songs go well with each.
Exactly.
It's pacing.
Yeah.
But, you know, like we were talking, I don't know if we were on air or
Who knows?
But the podcast thing, do people listen to whole albums anymore? And we all know that they don't.
Yeah.
You know, you just try to get them with whatever you can. So ultimately, you just satisfy your urge as an artist to write a book, basically. And so certain things, well, you can't have that song there because it makes no sense with
that. Interesting.
So, yeah, it's just telling a story, for me at least. So the reason Willow Springs did so well, I think, was, it's back to the authenticity. I think it was the first album I wrote really sober.
Wow.
So that was what was different. Yeah. I didn't think it was any different than any other record I put out, but people certainly reacted to it. So there must be something there.
Do you and your Heather ever write together?
We have, yeah.
What's that like?
Well, it's great. You know, we have very different styles. So, but we do, and when we do, it's organic. You know, we don't try to sit down and do something together. I'll be like, hey, this would be, you know. So we've done it before, and it's been great. So, you know.
You still have any friends from the old bad days?
Somewhat. Not many, because you know you got to cut those people loose. You know, obviously.
Well, some get sober though. I mean, some follow that.
Well, you know, now I've become this like ambassador for sobriety. I get calls from people I barely know, or people on Facebook write me, and I'm just like, I'm that guy now.
Oh no, really? I have to wait. I haven't got time to help you. I haven't got time.
I remember John Hyatt he got sober, and I love John Hyatt. He's a very nice man, but he had written something. He's like, the only bars I see now have carrots and tomatoes, and I thought, oh please, you know, I never want to be that guy, you know.
The future for you, it's a tough thing. I mean, you see yourself playing forever.
I mean, it's a concern.
And you know what I mean?
I think if I stay healthy, you know, I certainly, you know, because listen, when I walk into the kitchen, nobody applauds.
Yeah,
so like, so as long as I walk in, whether I don't care how small that room is, when I walk on stage, when they applaud, that's a drug. It really is. And I think, really, ultimately, you know, Donald Trump doesn't need the money. He's got already power. He's a junkie, and his behavior, I've seen this. He's an addict. Really, it's that addict behavior, and I see it mentally. I see his erratic behavior, and it's all fueled. It fuels that dopamine hit he gets when he walks into a room and they play the thing or they chant Locker Up. He gets high off that, and he's really just a junkie, and he needs help, and he should really go to rehab.
Well, he hasn't called you yet.
No.
You expect him to call you? That'll be a nice call for you to get. That'll be a very nice call for you to get.
You need a lot of help, pal.
City Winery's been a good,
it
good
has,
home
yeah.
for you.
It's a wonderful place. Yeah.
What's your perfect venue? You've obviously played dozens.
Yeah.
Of different settings. What's perfect for you?
Well, I love the rock clubs are great, but you know, but everybody has to stand for a really long time, you know. And
right.
And I don't know how conducive that is anymore. So City Winery is really just a great venue. People can sit, and then, you know, it's a bit of a struggle to get them to stand up, but when they do, then it's on. But yeah, I miss the rock and roll show. You know, I've become kind of relegated to being a folk singer, really, of sorts, you know.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I started. And
there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, it's an isolated life,
I think,
though.
Now, I was thinking of seeing these stories about the Uptown.
Yeah, I saw that.
You're coming back. I'm thinking, who is going to play
Yeah.
4,500 seat venue.
Because then the Aragon's right there, and is it 4,000?
Oh, I don't think it's anywhere near.
Oh, is it not?
No.
But
I mean, you know, to my mind, I mean, that's going to be a rough.
It will.
The last show I saw, there was Springsteen. He played for 3 hours.
In 78 or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a nice place to see Springsteen, but I don't know who's going to ever fill that place. Maybe you will.
Maybe.
And your wife, and maybe Rain will pick up a tambourine or
something. I've had to make paradigm shifts with my, you know. I'm happy with City Winery.
When you write, is it arduous for you, or do you get an idea and build on that idea. I don't mean to probe your creative.
No. It's arduous most of the time, you know. And today was a good day. Yeah, but the last
you try to write every day.
Oh yeah, yeah. I get up early and just go right at it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Today was a good day, but the last three were just, you know, like wrestling an alligator. You know, just like you know. And then out of that though, really, you just write and write and write. And then if you get one good line, then you go, there it is. Wow. And then you go from there.
But you do it every morning.
Yeah, try to. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah. With an instrument?
No, just computer.
Interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting. Michael, you're a fascinating guy.
Oh, geez, Rick.
No, you really are. You're a fascinating
guy. Wait till we get to lunch, then I'm going to turn the tables on.
Yeah. Let's see. Michael wants to end with a song. I got to read a commercial, and then we'll end with a song. And your daughter's not listening. She's not.
No, she's asleep.
Good.
Yeah.
This is too late. Too dangerous. Daddy, you did drugs?
Yeah.
The curse of the Billy Goat is finally over, and we've got Northside champions. But the Billy Goat lives on in the friendly taverns at Dot Chicago and in a new place, too. At participating Jewel Osco stores, Mariano's, and Pete's Fresh Market in the Chicagoland area, you'll find the world-famous Billy Goat burgers, frozen and ready to go home with you. You're the chef now, so start up the grill. But don't forget to add cheese, pickles, and onions to create your own world champion cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. Are your parents still alive?
No, they're not.
Neither of them?
No.
Did they see you sober?
My dad did.
And what was his reaction? Pleased, I would think.
Well, yeah.
Or suspicious.
It was hard to say. He wasn't in good shape, so they didn't really get to see it much.
You know,
which is sad, because that's all my mom ever really wanted.
Yeah, yeah. That's a shame. Let's hear this song that you wanted to play.
And appropriately
you're the disc
titled,
jockey again.
Aptly titled.
Oh, we got to take a break now? Oh that's good. For what? Commercials? We have commercials here? I read them. Take a break for commercials, then we can end the show the way Michael really wants to end it, with the final song. Okay, we'll be right back. We're now just talking about how Michael McDermott is going to be introduced one day to Bruce Elliott, and that meeting
will be the apocalypse.
Nothing else.
Right,
it'll inspire Bruce to write something on his blog, and it might inspire Michael to write a song about Bruce. There is absolutely no telling. Michael, it is your show. Michael, when you go to michael-mcdermott.com, you can figure out how to see his shows. Those of you around the country, you can read a very, very straightforward and frank biography that he has, an autobiography, I would call it. You can see some videos, some lyrics. You can buy stuff. And you can a little sort of even get to know Heather a little bit on that thing.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, lovely website. He is a working musician in a crazy, crazy music business. Now you are a disc jockey.
Yeah, I am. Thank you, Rick. It was my honor.
We're pals,
honestly.
No.
Yeah. So Heather thinks this song is so depressing, but I don't. I think the world and I think the people were all beautifully broken, perfectly imperfect. And I think as soon as we accept that, then everything changes from there. So anyway, this is a song called This World Will Break Your Heart. Thank you.
There's an old man at the counter and he couldn't feed himself. No one seemed to make a move to offer any help. The waitress didn't notice, she went about her day. Passed out at the bus stop, a bearded man did lay. No one got too close to check if he was okay. He had a tattoo of Semper Fi and God bless the USA. This world will break your heart. This world will break your heart. This world will break your heart in a thousand different ways. And Allie lost her baby in the final month. The room was painted blue, they had a name picked for their son. The husband said they'd try again, he didn't know what else to say. And
50 years of marriage if he'd made it till July. The nurse gave back his clothes as she began to cry. She told the social worker she had nowhere else to stay. And this world will break your heart. This world will break your heart. And this world will break your heart in a thousand different ways. There's fire on the hillside and oil in the sea. The people hurting everywhere as far as I can see. We're just castles made of sand and someday we're gonna wash away. Stumbled in with an unlit cigarette. He said he just got off the phone with Mr. Capulet, who warned, boy, best be careful or there will be hell to pay. Babe, we're getting older. Yeah, this much is true. But each day is a gift that I get to spend with you. Babe, I'll always love you beyond my dying day. This world will break your heart. This world will break your heart. This world will break your heart in a thousand different ways.
Michael McDermott, that's a beautiful song.
Thank you, Rick.
And great success with this new
thank
CD.
You.
What's the title of it?
Out From Under.
Out From Under, which is sort of the story of your life.
Yeah,
I mean, that sure. Is, if you've been listening, you've heard the story, and it's an empowering kind of story.
You.
No wonder people are calling you to ask for help and advice.
Mm.
You will be on again when we get this music studio
all right.
up. Hey, Ben. This would be like our first guest. We'll play for 2 hours, and I'll sit here with his kid. And say, what does your dad do? What does your dad do? Say hello to your daughter, Rain, and to your wife,
thank you.
Heather, who is a talented musician in her
she
own
is.
Right. Her CD is Don't Mess With Mrs. Murphy.
And you shouldn't.
Heather Lynn Horton is her name.